Eye on Careers.
In association with LeMoon.com. Jobs, courses, and all things career.
This is Eye on Careers, the career clinic, charting your next move.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and this is Eye on Careers. We are here with a man by the name of Jawan Oldham. He is an NBA superstar, and he looks the part at 7'1", a man who has played with all the greats, played with Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, Magic Johnson, so many of them. Jawan, please welcome to Ion Careers.
Thank you for having me. Love to be here.
It's a pleasure.
Yes.
And this is one of your favorite songs here, is it?
Yes. Love jazz. Love jazz.
Jazz fan, huh?
Yes. Big jazz fan.
Do you play yourself? Or?
No, I wish I did. Tried to when I was in high school, but never got that, was too patient with my saxophone, so.
Okay. What did you play, the tenor or the alto? Or?
I was more of a tenor.
Okay. Yeah. So, it's exciting to see, you know, wherever you go, people are like taking pictures of you. I couldn't basically even get you in the studio. There's like, usually no one bothers me. You know, yeah. We couldn't even walk through the hall here.
Yeah.
You had like, how many, in the span of the first 20 minutes of being here, I think you had like 500 pictures taken.
I don't know. It's amazing. You know, in America, I'm almost normal, but here it's like, everywhere I go, someone wants to take a picture with me, and it's kind of strange because I don't know them, and they're like, "Can I take a picture with you?" I'm like, "Well, wait a minute, you know what's going to happen with this picture?" So I'm very cautious about that, actually. So
yeah, you've actually had a few stalkers.
yeah, I did. I actually had a stalker here in Dubai. So that was just totally out of the ordinary there. So.
But Dubai is great for that, though, because, you know, the laws here make it very difficult, right? Like, you don't have to step too far to the left. You can, you know, easily shut. Whereas in the U.S., yeah. The stalker has more rights than the person being stalked, right?
Yeah. You know, I just went to this big thing with Ace a lot. And one of the managers there is Omar, helped me out so much about what was going on with my website and this guy stalking me. So that was quite interesting. He was very helpful, very professional, very articulate about, you know, the way we went about it and solved the problem. So that was a really good experience.
So how many NBA games? I think you've played over 1,300 NBA games.
Yeah. Quite a few. I think almost close to 1,500, something like that.
You know? Close to 1,500.
Yep.
Wow, what's that like when you're in there? Do you actually feel the crowd? Because these crowds are huge, right?
I think at the beginning when you're warming up, you'll feel the crowd. But as you start the game and proceed into the game, you actually block the crowd out, you know, and you want to focus on the game and what your coach is telling you and your teammates and stuff. So you've got to have this tunnel vision when you're in the game and this focus. You know, and the crowd is the crowd, but your teammates and your coach are, you know, another thing that you really have to focus on.
The focus seems to be, you know, whether you're a basketball player or a banker or what, mm-hmm. seems to be the critical element.
It is. Focus and I think perseverance is something that you've really, really got to take in serious consideration when you're doing a job. As a banker or as a professional athlete, you've got to have focus, you know, and you've got to block everything out and really concentrate, you know, that tunnel vision on everything. So,
but so growing up, did you know you wanted to go play in the NBA as a child or?
No, my coaches were very grounded with me and they wanted me to take it one step at a time, you know. So, you know, being in grade school and then junior high school and then on to college. So I never thought about it, but I loved watching basketball, college basketball and professional basketball, you know. So I think I was too terrified of the thought of playing professional basketball. I wanted to see how much better I could get at it.
So one of the main themes was competing against yourself rather than the next guy?
Competing against myself, competing against other players that were, you know, close to my size or my same size. And that's why I think my coaches took me outside of the box and took me to other places in the United States where I could compete against guys my size and guys that were really, really, I thought they were top-notch players and really, really excellent basketball and athletic players.
Well, how tall were you at 13 years old?
Oh, we already went through this, didn't we? Okay. At 13 years old, I was about 6'7".
What? Yeah. 6'7".
Yeah.
So do you, like, intimidate the teacher? So, I like, do you, like, grade six? You're like, what do you mean I failed the test? No, I let me recheck that, Juwan. Look, yeah. It's fine.
No, I never intimidated my teachers. I always respected my teachers. You know, my teachers are the ones that got me to where I was at, actually, the academic side of it. So, yeah, you got to be a intelligent athlete rather than one that doesn't have intelligence.
But you're that's huge. So when did you break 6 foot? Or how old were you when you broke the 6 foot mark?
Probably about 10, 11 years old, something like that, I think, maybe. Mm. You know, could have been 9, yeah. Yeah.
9 years old, yeah. And you're over 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah,
that's
my mother was shocked too. But she was like 5'9", so, you know, and my dad was 6'4", so, you know, there's a lot of peaks and valleys in the family, but I was the tallest in the family, the biggest one out of 11 kids.
Wow. But so what were some of the key things as you develop? Because as you make the jump from, you know, I'm sure in high school it's easy to dominate. Mm. But as you get to varsity level, it's very competitive. You know, you know, those top schools are pulling the players from all over the world.
Yeah.
So what were some of the key things that allowed you to make that critical leap?
I think my continuous development by my coaches, you know, I had like 4 or 5 coaches from junior high school all the way to high school to college, you know. You have to know how to coach a person that is extremely tall and to make them into an athlete, you know, not just a basketball player, because the athletic part comes first, then the basketball player comes second. So you must be mobile. You must be articulate in your basketball. You must be smart, and you must be agile in your basketball, and you must be an athlete, you know, because basketball is one of the top cardio sports in the world. I mean, you do like almost 5 Olympic events in basketball. So the coaches really took me to the side and really, you know, kept me grounded and really, you know, were working with me all the time and stuff, because they saw the rate I was growing all the time. So, I mean, in high school, I was 6'10", 6'11", you know. Junior high school, I was 6'9", 6'8", you know. And then when I got to college, I finally peaked at 7'1", so.
But, you know, you weren't playing 5 or 6 different sports. You focused on one thing day in, day out.
Yeah.
If you weren't playing it, you were watching it.
Yes, yes. Yeah, mostly mainly basketball. But I think I was an athlete. I did water skiing. I did snow skiing. You know, I did a lot of athletic things besides the basketball.
I would love to see you on skis.
Anytime. Anytime. I'm still really good at it.
Really? Yes. All right. Ski Dubai.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anytime.
That'll be a scene. I'm Canadian, so we're born on skis. So.
Yep. Love skiing.
But you were living up in Seattle, which is a great ski area as well. So you were right in the real mountain. Those are the real.
Snoqualmie Pass. Snoqualmie Pass, we were always trucking up to the mountains every weekend to go skiing, and we'd be up there like all weekend for like hours and day on the slopes and stuff, going skiing and stuff, you know. So, and then the summertime we'd be water skiing.
So then in university, your final year, you know that you're being drafted to the NBA.
Yeah, that was probably one of the most terrifying experiences in my life. I was going to get drafted. So, yes, I did, you know, but I really did focus on my college career academically and athletically, you know, and I think the icing on the cake was my senior year in college, and, you know, they said, it's going to happen, you know, and I think I was still in denial it was going to happen, but it did happen. So I was happy it happened. I was happy it happened, you know.
You must have made some new lady friends as you start to approach that point. Your popularity goes up slightly.
just a tad bit.
Yeah, just bit. Purely social friends, yeah, you know.
Truly, truly social friends, yes.
So it's an exciting time, but it's also, I guess, but you said it was scary because most people would, you know, look at it being tantamount to winning the lottery.
Well, I think back then, you know, compared to right now, we were like I said, we were more grounded, you know. And then I didn't anticipate it. I took it step by step, you know. I didn't want to think too far ahead of myself. I wanted to, my coaches really wanted to take me, you know, at each step, you know, and phase of my career of basketball. So I wanted to really, really, you know, be humbled and be grounded, especially when I got there.
So what's the, like, you know, because I think there's pay bands in the NBA, right? So the lowest paid, like, because I know in the NFL, because my friends went to, a couple of my friends went to the NFL, the lowest paid NFL player, if you are just sitting on the bench, like, you don't even put the uniform on. So these are the guys on the side, like, who are the, you know, who are those? They don't have a uniform, and they're just sitting there watching the game.
Yeah.
They make minimum $250,000 U.S. dollars a year. So that's, so like, legally you cannot make less than that and be on the roster. Was the NBA close to the same kind of on par, or is it, what's the?
It was, I think there were stages of pay, you know. I think back when I was playing, when you were a rookie, you made less money than if you were a three-year man, you know. And I think as you aged and as you grew, and how many years you put in, I think your pay got better. I'm pretty sure that's how it went, you know. So,
so very aloof there, not really giving us much. Just, the longer you play, the more money you make.
Yeah.
It's very enlightening.
Yeah,
it is. Believe it or not.
Well, and then, and plus on the other hand, of course, you had endorsements and you had Nike contracts and you had, you know, other kind of endorsements that you had. So that brought in extra income for you. So. It was a good life. It was a very.
And you
good
get
life.
Free shoes and stuff when you're sponsored, which are awesome. That's something money can't buy.
Yeah, that was something amazing when I got out of college that I was getting free shoes, especially in my size.
What size foot are you? Like 700? Well, you're size 24 or something. Like
that? Well, okay.
What size are you?
All I know is feet. In I'm basically a 16. Or we're
16?
Yeah, a 16.
That's pretty big. So you can't buy those. So that was pretty. That was one of the big benefits.
My doctor always said I was well proportioned for my size, so I had great balance down there. So it was a perfect size.
Jesus Christ! Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well,
could you imagine me being your size and wearing a 16?
Yeah. My feet are size 16, Juwan.
Really? I didn't know that. My God. No.
Anyway, if you want to ask the man who's played with the NBA, Juwan, all them over 1,500 professional games, played with Michael Jordan and all the greats, and we're going to be back looking at what it takes to make it in professional sports. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And we are, for those just joining us, we heard the story of Ahmed Luta, the chief executive officer of Al Hilal Capital, and how Islamic banking started in the region with his uncle, who started Dubai Islamic Bank in 1975, growing it up now to one of the top five Islamic banks in the world. Obviously, one of the big tenets there is focus and drive. But actually, Ahmed is still with us here, and he's come back because we have a celebrity here in the studio with us, Juwan Oldham, a professional basketball, prior professional basketball player. He's stretching out here, getting ready for the mic. Very, very large man who, as his doctor has prescribed, is in proportion. He's 7'1". Juwan, welcome to back to Eye on Careers. Of course, I'm referring to your feet, size 16.
Yes.
That keep you dexterous.
My feet.
Balanced. And so this is the critical thing. Ahmed, welcome back to Eye on Careers. And sorry, they'll try it now. Welcome back to Ion Careers.
Thank you.
There you go. I had your mic off, but there. So, Juwan, so you were talking about you took that jump into being drafted. What an exciting period in your life! But you said it made you very nervous.
It did. You know, I admired and watched all my favorite players in the NBA. Back in the day, Wilt Chamberlain and Spencer Haywood and all those guys. And I was a bit intimidated. I thought I wasn't good enough, and my coaches always told me I was, you know, and this was the right place and the right thing for me to do. So
It was you had self-doubt.
Yeah, it was a bit intimidating. It really was, you know.
You didn't think you were, because we were just talking about this, the idea of staying positive, and that in most U.S. cities, the suicide rate's higher than the homicide rate. Yeah. So psychologically, we are knocking ourselves out of the game. You can be your own worst enemy.
Yeah. I used a reverse psychology on myself, though. What I wanted to do was be humble and be a little intimidated. That would make me more hungry and make me work harder.
Okay. So how do you reverse on yourself? Because reverse is if you don't know what the person's doing, but you would know because it's yourself, is it? So you would pseudo-reverse it.
Yeah. Kind of like, you know, you psych yourself out a little bit. It's like what I used to do before my games. I used to, my preparation was that I would, of course, never underestimate your opponent. Always think that he's your equal or you're under him. You know, and that would make me play better, and that would make me play at the top of my game, my coaches would say. So never underestimate your opponent. Don't overestimate yourself. And always play at a higher level than you think you're worthy of playing at.
So in all those games and everything you've gone through, what's been the biggest challenge for you in your life that you've ever faced?
I think something that we touched on before, I had lost a brother in Chicago when I was playing for the Chicago Bulls, and I had never lost a family member. I mean, like I said, there's 11 of us, 6 boys and 5 girls, and my brother was kind of close to me, and he was pretty young, and I flew from Chicago back to Seattle to see him, and within 2 days, he had passed away, and I had to fly back to Chicago and jump right back into my uniform and play a game. And I think that was an emotional challenge for me and a physical challenge for me, because I had to refocus myself and physically and mentally on my job and what I was doing for the Chicago Bulls and stuff. So that was a big challenge.
How old were you when that happened?
I was about 22 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, and you have to go out at 22 and play in front of, what, 50,000 people?
Yeah. So that was hard for me, but luckily it was my hometown, actually, Chicago. That's where I was born. That's where my mother's from. That's where my brothers and sisters were raised at. So luckily they supported me, you know, and they gave me a lot of love and support. And but it was hard doing it. It was really hard doing it. And, you know, my general manager advised me not to go back to Seattle to see him, because he knew the emotional toll it probably would have taken on me, you know, at such a young age.
So they actually, but you did end up, you have to go back, obviously.
Yeah, I did go back. Me and my girlfriend went back to Chicago to see him, and we went to the hospital, and we spent a couple of days with him, and then I had to get right back to Chicago because my coach wanted me back in uniform and wanted me, you know, to be in the next game. So I ran back to Chicago and rejoined the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan, got in uniform. We played a game, and it was an emotional thing, but, you know, there's something you had to focus and block out, you know, but it was hard for me to do that at 22 years old. But I think it matured me. I think it seasoned me. I think it really grew me up a lot, you know, and having to face what my brother had went through, and having to face my job and my responsibilities back in Chicago with the Bulls, you know. So I think it was a very enlightening and very good experience for me.
It was a good experience. I mean, how do you pull through? Because most people won't show up at work, right? You know, and let alone show up at work and have 50,000 people watch them perform. Could you imagine you're at your desk and you have 50,000 people, and like you do one sales call wrong, you do one thing, and people start booing, you know? and then you had the death of a loved one, and you know, when you're depressed, your energy's gone, right? You just can't move, and now you have to run around and slam dunk, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's one of the things the NBA, they train you to do is to be mental toughness. You know, and you have to have mental and physical toughness when you're in the league, because psychologically it's draining, physically it's draining, you know, and you have to have that focus and that tunnel vision of going to one city to another city, back to back, getting on a plane on your jet, you know, flying to another city, going home, you know. So you just have to have that mental and physical toughness, and And that's one thing that helped me deal with the situation with my brother, and then playing in a game 2 days later, you know, and then going on the road with the team. So it's not easy, you know. Like I said, basketball is one of the hardest, I think, mentally and physically games you can play, you know, besides being, I think, a footballer, you know, a soccer player, you know. So it's, like I said, it matures you, it evolves you, you know, it makes you have more perseverance and focus, you know. So I'm glad the NBA installed that in me when I got there, because believe me, it was, that was one of the most difficult things, making it into the league after you were drafted and being a mainstay and becoming a starting center.
Well, what are some of the things you do to keep that mental toughness, that focus, you know, that mental resilience? Because I think that's one of the key things that actually separate that top performer from the person who just stays mediocre.
Well, some things I do is, you know, quiet time. You know, I love listening to my jazz. I love, like when I was playing back in the league, you know, we had kind of like a little bit of focus group, and we had a somewhat of a prayer group before games. You know, you have to have, I think, a certain condition of, you live in a bubble somewhat, you know, so you got to have that quiet time and that focus time, you know, to meditate, and so you can prepare yourself for games, big games, small games, it doesn't matter. But, you know, I still do that. I still sit down on the floor on my rug, and I still, you know, sit there for a while and have some quiet time and do some prayer. So that's really good and gives me a lot of confidence and a lot of focus in my life. So perseverance, you know, goes a long way.
Is it more a battle of wills? Is it a psychological warfare that you have to play as well as a?
Oh yes, yeah. Oh yeah. It plays on the mind extremely to the point where I've seen a lot of players break down just by other players talking to them in a certain way, psychologically.
Trash talking.
Yeah, you might call it that. Some players approach it in another way, you know. I just saw a lot of players psychologically that couldn't take it, couldn't handle it, you know, made them nervous, made them insecure, you know, the crowd, you know, or them being having to perform in front of 50,000 people and perform for their team and, you know, and be successful and produce for their team. So it's a psychological and a physical war that you're in, you know, and you have to maintain your stability.
Ahmed, is the banking environment as tough as that? Do you have to, you know, is it as much a battle of wills out there in the banking environment, or?
Absolutely. It's like playing a basketball game. You know, he's talking about never underestimate your opponent. Mm-hmm. You know, you always be ready to work harder. Mm-hmm. You have to be tough, because imagine investment banker, you have to sit on all those meetings, you know, be ready for the competition. Especially when you're doing private equity deals, there's a lot of stress. You will have a lot of psychological influence, as he says, from either the buyer or the seller, you know, to complete this transaction, to have an over-evaluation, all that, it's similar. When he was talking, I was just kind of like, you know, having flashbacks of whatever he calls games, the same thing we do is in deals. Mm-hmm. There's no difference.
This we're listening to the story of Juwan Oldham, one of the previous top NBA players, over 1,500 professional matches under his belt. And we are going to be hearing what it takes to make it, his secrets to success, in just a minute. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And we are here with Juwan Oldham, one of the... Yeah, I think he's played over 1,500 NBA games, played with Michael Jordan, played with Charles Barkley, played with some of the greats of his time. Juwan, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
And also staying over from the last session is Ahmed Luta, the Chief Executive Officer for Al Hilal Capital. Welcome back, Ahmed.
Thank you, Shane.
And so Juwan, when you look at your career, you know, going from a high school into varsity into pro, and then having a very long career in the NBA, how do you approach your personal development? What's your approach to you know, keeping yourself in that top 1% of the population?
I think perseverance, focus, hard work. You don't really have a chance or want to ever rest. You want to keep improving. You want to keep evolving and developing. You know, you never are satisfied. And like what I said before, it's always a journey. It's not a destination. Once you start thinking it's a destination, that's when you start to become complacent with it. And you don't never, ever want to become complacent with it. You want to always keep your journey going, keep your evolution going, and keep rising higher and higher. So it's an ongoing thing. It's an ongoing thing. It's never something that you say, one year I made the team, the next year I'm satisfied. You know, because that's when you drop your guard down. And I think somebody else or a rookie is going to come in right behind you and say, oh, you shouldn't have did that. And he's probably going to, you know, outdo you in practice or outdo you in a game, you know. So my coaches always kept me guessing. They always tested me. You know, they always let me sit there on the bench for 1, 2, 3 quarters, and then all of a sudden, the fourth quarter, they'd snap their fingers and call my name out loud. Okay, it's showtime, like Magic used to say. It's time to perform. You've got to get out there in front of 50,000 people, and you have to think outside the box.
But when you're younger, it's easier, right? You know, your coach is there. It's very easy to find players or people around you who have more experience. Yes. But, you know, when you're 1,400 games into the NBA, you know, where do you look for advice or that coaching? It's like someone's coaching you, be like, well, how many NBA games have you played?
Yeah.
you know. So how do you approach that continuous improvement as you move to the more senior levels? Because I think executives have the same issue, right?
I would always go back to my origins. I'd always go back to my coaches who got me there, the ones that basically evolved me and grew me up. I would always go back and ask them if I was doing something wrong. What am I doing wrong? How do I correct it? You know, always go back to your origin. You know, I think that's the best way for you to have further evolution. You know, keep working and go back to your origins, you know, and go back and go over those things that got you there, you know, and make sure that you're doing those things correctly, because sometimes you can alter stuff, things can change, you know. So my coaches really were supportive when I came back to them after I was in the NBA. My high school coaches, you know, my college coaches were always very supportive of me. And they would say, you know, there's just little things you need to tweak and you need to change, you know, but you're doing well, you know, keep working hard, keep focused, and keep evolving and keep your journey going.
How important is strategy, you know, when you're going in? You know, you guys are watching game tape, you know, weeks, months before you play another team.
Yeah.
You're formulating that game plan, that strategy, and how do you tie all that vision, strategy, and tactics together? I imagine it must be very similar to a corporate environment.
It is. It's kind of like basically, you know, strategy going into a small little war. You know, and our coaches always made sure that we were fresh, and we play a game in, you know, a team 3 nights later, and we'd go through strategy 2 nights before. We'd watch game film. You know, everybody would have a scouting report. Sometimes the scouting reports would be 16 pages long. Everybody had an individual scouting report on the player that they would be guarding. It would go through everything from what kind of food he likes, you know.
Find out what kind of food he likes?
Yeah.
No, you
I mean,
wouldn't.
It would be, the scouting reports would be so intimate, you know, on his habits, what he does on the floor, what he likes to do, his consistency, his inconsistencies. Is he mentally tough? Is he psychologically tough? You know, we would watch film on that individual or the whole team over and over again. And then we would go into the war, basically, with that strategy and that scouting report on that player. and what the team did as a team. So the scouting reports were very thorough. We had professional scouts that would go to NBA games ahead of us, and they would sit at the top of the stands, up in the 50th row, with a camera, a movie camera, and they would sit there and take notes, you know. And the other scout would go down behind the bench, and he would look, listen, and hear what the coach was saying to him, and watch the guys. So our scouting reports were very thorough.
It'd be like sitting behind the team, during the game.
All the NBA teams allow it, you know.
They also in the corporate sector, you know, you have
never had a 16-page report of someone you're going to a meeting. Are you serious? You know what favorite food is?
We did.
My God. Did you have a 16-page report on me?
No, not that.
I love sushi. That's my
great. You know, we'll take you out afterwards for a great sushi place.
I love it.
But you get that also. You know, you have a lot of due diligence. That we do very, very similar competitor intelligence.
Okay, but seriously, when I look at the investment community, what they do, you guys do due diligence on the financials, but I think there's a huge gap on the people. You know, like how much due diligence background do you actually do in terms of an assessment on the senior leadership team?
We do definitely. Okay, when going to private equity deals. As you know, we have to be on the ground. That's what's passion is all about. That's what guarding your reputation is all about. That's what doing things right. You have to drill down all the way, okay, to the nitty gritty details when you're doing due diligence. One minor mistake might just blow up the whole thing.
So, do you have an industrial psychologist on staff or someone who's, you know, qualified in personal personality assessments or executive assessments?
We do hire specialists, and you know, it depends on the case, but sometimes we have to drill down ourselves when it comes to actually like deals, acquisition deals. We have to sit on the ground, go down, walk around in organizations and kind of spot where the issues are, and then actually dig more into it if we had any doubts.
One of the concepts that I like is, you know, knowing what moves the needle, you know, in terms of what actually makes a successful private equity deal or what actually makes a successful center. You know, Muhammad Ali used to do this as well in terms of, you know, he used to look at film of all the old greats, and then he would start shadow boxing and copying the moves. You know, do you actually look at other successful centers in the game and assess them and say, you know, do you have benchmarks like, wow, you know, I really think Mr. X or Mr. Y is good. These are the things that are making them good.
I did. I used to mimic Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, probably my two favorite centers. I used to always watch their games, watch their game films, from their footwork all the way to their mannerisms, you know, leading up to a free throw shot, you know, how they practice, you know, what were their habits, strength and conditioning, what did they do to keep themselves in shape, you know. So that was a good mentoring tool for me to watch those guys. I think Kareem and Wilt were probably the two most dominating centers in NBA history. So that was good to have a role model like that, or a role model like them, excuse me, and be able to focus on what they did and how they did it and what took them.
Did you call them up and say, hey, Kareem, man, I just bought your glasses. Can you teach me a few moves?
I wasn't that intimate with Kareem, but I was more personal with Wilt.
So you actually called him up and said, can you mentor me?
No, I saw Wilt in California a lot. I used to see him a lot. You know, I used to ask him questions and everything, you know. And I think Wilt saw me in college and saw how much I had grown from college to pro. And he was just totally amazed. And when he saw I was 7'1", the same size as him, you know, so
he couldn't refuse you then when you're like that big. You're like, can I ask you a few questions? Like, yeah, that's fine, Juwan. What would you like to know?
No,
I'll answer your questions.
Will was a great guy, very open, you know. I went to his house. I saw his house. You've probably seen his house on the movie Charlie's Angels. That's Wilt Chamberlain's house.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the house that Wilt built. But Wilt was
that's a good place to get mentored in.
Yeah.
But, mentorship's going to be pretty popular. Very
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but Wilt was very very generous with the knowledge and with helping me train and telling me to do certain things and like that. You know, Kareem was more solemn. He was more introverted, I think. Kareem was into, you know, he was a student of Bruce Lee, you know, so.
Hiya. This is Eye on Careers, and we're looking at what it takes to be successful. This is a concept of mentorship and benchmarking. Look at who else is doing your job or your profession. Who do you think is good? And then asking them to teach you a few things. And so these are some of the really key concepts that you look at in terms of when you are moving your profession to the next level. And this is the story of Juwan Oldham, one of the greatest NBA players. And we're also accompanied with Ahmed Aluta, the Chief Executive Officer of Al Hilal Capital. So we're looking at what moves the needle here in your profession. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we're listening to the story of Juwan Oldham, one of the greatest NBA players of his time, played over 1,500 professional games, played with Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, Magic Johnson. He played for the Chicago Bulls. Now he's in Dubai. He runs a company called Juwan Oldham's Professional Developmental Basketball Academy, where he helps people develop professionally and athletically, obviously also helping them with their basketball skills. Juwan, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
And we're also here with one of the pioneers in Islamic finance and Islamic banking, Ahmed Luta, Chief Executive Officer of Al Hilal Capital. Welcome back to Eye on Careers, Ahmed.
Pleasure.
And I think for those just joining us, you were just describing a technique which I think, you know, professionals should adopt, and the top performers, whether you're a basketball player or a banker, do, you know, when you're saying, okay, who you know, you were a center with the Bulls, mm-hmm. And you would look at the market, you say, who else is a really top performing center, mm-hmm. what makes them a top performing center, mm-hmm. and then actually approach them and interact with them and ask them tips and get that knowledge share. Mm-hmm. Ahmed, you know, do you this concept of identifying top performers, adopting their best practices, and also mentorship, how does that play into the success story of a banker? Are there parallels here?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, an example, like, he goes back to his roots. We go back to our roots. We go back to prime business people that actually have built Dubai. You know, we're the anchors of business in Dubai, and we go back to that, to ask them, you know, how do they see the future, what we should do, what could be, you know, the things that we can improve, and they will give you answers, but they're usually, their answers is also a cultural covered thing. They will give you an answer, but you have to read between the lines.
And it's like a riddle.
That's the beauty of it.
Right.
So as you get more interacted with them, then you'll be able to do that.
Yeah. For anyone listening out there, here's a really quick key and secret to success. You know, no matter what you are, if you're a lawyer, accountant, if you're a chaiwala, whatever it is, look to those people in the market who you think are the top performers and just start to look at what makes them a top performer. What's their background? What's their focus? Talk to them, interact with them, reach out with them, and ask them for tips on how you can develop yourself. This will be one of the success catalysts that you'll find in your career. Juwan, nobody comes on the show without being asked the infamous question as, what is the secret to your success?
Eye on Careers now reveals the secrets to success.
So Juwan, what is the secret to your success?
Perseverance, hard work, focus. Those are my secrets to my success.
Eye on Careers.
In association with LeMoon.com, jobs, courses, and all things career.
Hard work, perseverance, and what was the third one?
Perseverance, hard work, and focus, and evolution, actually, too.
Focus and evolution, yes. Which is the change, agility, or innovation. Yes.
You must be able to adapt to change and adapt to it. You know, you must grow and have an evolution. You know, you must be able to adapt to it as you go higher and older in your age. But age, with age comes wisdom.
But I think you only get that wisdom if you've been focused. You know, if you would have played basketball for 5 years and then been playing, you know, American football and, you know, a couple other sports in there, the chance of you being drafted get lower, but the chances of you getting drafted and staying there definitely significantly reduce, because when you're going toe-to-toe with a guy who's had 10 years pure basketball experience versus your five, not preferable.
But it was so enjoyable to, when I got into the NBA, actually, and I was a rookie, and I had to play against Robert Parrish and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and to see how much better they were and how much more skilled they were than me, that was a great learning tool for me. And that's why I kind of looked at them for mentorship and wisdom. You know, like I said, with age comes wisdom. So, you know, and wisdom comes age. So that's how, you know, I looked at my life, my career, and how I wanted to basically stay on top and keep evolving, you know. So focus and perseverance and, you know, evolution are very important as you go up the ladder. And like I said, you know, make it a journey, not a destination.
Yeah, I think so many people get caught up in that destination. Yeah. This is what I want.
Yeah.
And, you know, private equity guys do this all the time. They're so excited by private equity.
Yeah.
But the journey is, you know, you better enjoy sitting there going through financial statements, crunching those numbers.
Yeah.
Some people actually do enjoy that. They're the ones who will be successful. I mean, what do you say about that, Amit?
Well, you know, it's a journey, as he says. You know, we had 20, you know, through 20 years, I've been through ups and downs, different negotiations, different companies, in different deals. You have to have a passion for that and enjoy the journey. You never know. Sometimes you might not reach a destination.
Yeah. Well, the destination won't be there, because 50% of the jobs that are going to exist in 2030 do not exist right now.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
You know, like, where was digital marketing in 1995? Yeah. You know? There was no digital marketing, right? You know, it didn't exist. So it's amazing. Juwan, what's your final piece of advice for all those people out there that are looking to get the next rung in the ladder in their vocations?
I just think you should always work on your evolution and work on your focus, of course. And like I said, and I say it to my players all the time, you know, don't make this with me your destination. Keep your journey ongoing. I want to help you with your journey, push you along the road, and make you stay on that journey. So it just goes back to what I said, you know, a minute ago, you know, you have to have that focus. And like Amin says, you have to have that passion, and you must keep your journey and your focus going. And I think that will make you a more mentally stronger and more physically stronger person in your future.
Well, I want to thank you guys for coming out. I think this was one of the coolest shows where we're actually drawing the parallels between Islamic finance and professional basketball, and so many similarities. So thank you, Amit, for staying on.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me today, and it was a pleasure meeting Juwan as well.
Yes, Amit. Okay. Pleasure meeting you too, and thank you for having me too, Shane.
Thank you, Juwan, for coming. And for anybody who wants to get more of this show, you can see that we're going to have their podcasts on our website, on the DubaiEye1038.com website. And you can also look up Juwan Oldham's Professional Development Basketball Academy online, or you can email him at juwan@juwanbasketballacademy.com. And of course, you can also find Al Halal Capital for anyone who wants to do a ethical banking transaction. And that's it for this episode of Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, wishing you luck in chasing your dream.